Hi, everyone, and welcome to our live Q&A. I'm so excited to have Coach Veronica with us. Thanks for joining.
Hello, Daniel. Thanks for having me. How are you today?
I'm good. And I just saw now, I, as usual, I should have sent you the link earlier, so we had a chance to, you should have said Coach Veronica.
Yeah, but still, Veronica is still there. It's me. So it doesn't matter if you're Coach or not.
Same person.
Yeah.
Very well. So we're waiting for some questions to pop in that we look forward to answer. But in the meantime, I thought we could talk a little bit about what you've been up to lately. Meaning you've actually done some work in your native tongue in Slovak, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Actually, I haven't done that much. I'm just trying. I have made a layout of a course that I'm doing in my language. And because it was summer and kids were at home, so I didn't have that much time to work on it. But slowly I'm starting again. And at first I would like to set up a website. So my coaching starts really serious. I think there is a lot of work that I have to still do, but I think it's this is something I enjoy, and I think I will help many people in my country.
Absolutely, you certainly will. And you had had like two clients that actually came to you, sort of like not necessarily like they sort of like. How did you find them, by the way? How did they find you?
Last year when I had a major speed bump, I was in one community in one discussion. There I was writing my experience, so what am I dealing with, and I really didn't know about the sleep coach school or anything. It was just really sharing how am I going through my insomnia. And one of the participants, she wrote, it was just like 1 month ago, she wrote like to everyone who participated in this discussion, and she asked like, how are you doing after a year, and have you improved? So I was the only one that answered her, and I already was ready as a coach. So I offered her a coaching, and we had a few sessions. It was, I think, only 3 sessions, and she said she's doing much better, and we stopped right there because she said she doesn't need my help anymore. So it really did make me really happy, because it was kind of like a sign from above, like, yes, this is the direction you should be going. So I was really happy about this.
Amazing. And, you may or may not remember, but you probably do. But if you recall this first client you had, what do you think was the most helpful to her? What do you think helped her the most?
I think really that she found someone that she could confide in, someone that she can relate to, because our really first call was about did I speak about my story. About my ups and downs with insomnia and all the rabbit holes that I have been through. And as I started to talk about my story, she started to cry, because she said like it was like really the first time in her life that someone is speaking like basically what she has experienced. So this was really, really strong emotion for her, and I was really happy that I could help her out.
Amazing. And by the way, was we got one question here, and I see there's several people that have joined us, so feel free to ask questions, and in just a few minutes we'll start answering your questions. Andrea said hi to us. Hi, Andrea, nice having you here. Hi. And Brandon all has submitted a question that we'll get to in a second, but yeah, I was just curious, did she happen to be also from Slovakia, or this group was only for people in Slovakia, or
it is only in Slovak language? It is in Slovak language, so she's in Slovakia.
Okay, very well. Well, let's jump in and look at this first question we have. Steven also says hi, by the way. Hi, Steven, nice seeing you here. All right, so Brandon says, how should I respond with an actual disturbance to my sleep that happens at the same time every night when my dad wakes up at 4 a.m. ish? He begins his morning before work, and I often hear him. can't fall back asleep until he leaves, but my mind anticipates that I'll be awake by 3 to 4 a.m. every night for at least an hour. Thanks so much for this question, Brandon. And, you know, where my mind immediately went here was like, this is similar to what you work a lot with or what you experience, which is a mom who has to who will be awake with a kid who wakes up at a certain time and et cetera. So what are your thoughts when you hear this, Veronica?
Yeah, you are going the right path, I think, because this is like anticipatory insomnia. You are already expecting that you will be awake at night. And this was especially for me hard with my first kid. And I basically didn't sleep all the night because still I was expecting that I will be woken up. So really with my second child, it just turned 180 degrees around. And I didn't care like how much he woke me up. I still could sleep whenever. And it was really about the approach of what is insomnia. And it really is about this fear. And if you approach it like, okay, I know I will be awake at 4 a.m. in the morning, and there is basically nothing I can do about it, and I can only accept it and allow it to happen. Because when we resist it and when we reprimand ourselves, why am I still awake? Why I cannot still, fall asleep right away? This is going to create more and more pressure and hyper arousal to fall asleep. But if you allow this to happen, if you allow the process to be, this just gets easier and easier with time.
Yeah. Yeah, well said. And, you know, as you were speaking, I was thinking, like, on one hand, you know, we have this, like you said, anticipatory insomnia, like, I know I'm going to be woken up. So what can I do to prevent that is kind of a natural idea our brain goes, but it can go in the opposite direction too, which is like, I know I will wake up. So no surprise there. It will happen. There's really nothing, you know, nothing to do about it. And yeah, I think that that will certainly help. We have it. Yeah, very, very well. I think nothing more to really to add that. Well said, Veronica. Thanks, Brandon, for chiming in. Now TomTom is here as well and has a question for us. Why didn't it show up there? Okay. TomTom says, can sleeping pills like trazodone cause long-term sleeping issues? Very interesting question. And sort of like we can approach it from many, many, angles, but the first thing that comes to my mind is sort of the question of can sleeping pills like trazodone, like can they as a side effect have like problems sleep, or can they cause like brain damage that makes us have trouble sleeping long term? And I can go first here and say that I am not aware of any such like side effects or direct effects on the brain. In fact, I think that is impossible. I don't think anything can cause, like, of course, if we are in circumstances, stressful circumstances in life for a long time, then that can cause us to have like, you know, some trouble sleeping long term, or if we have this fear of being awake, of course. But other than that, nothing else can really cause insomnia. So I don't think there's any reason to, you know, be afraid of that. Now, on the flip side, like having taken trazodone for a long time, or the thoughts and ideas associated with that, you know, that can create some struggle. So before I go on any further, like, what are your thoughts, Veronica, on this topic?
I suffered with insomnia for 8 years, and in these 8 years I have changed many, many pills, like antidepressants, hypnotics, like benzos. I think like what there is on the market I've tried. And so I think the best example is the living example, like me. I don't have any brain damage, I hope. No, but I mean, I sleep well, and I basically don't see any brain, any problem, any side, long-term side effect of taking pills. I really think, like you teach, there are many things that can disrupt our sleep, and it only depends on our response. How do we respond to that, to what happened to us? If we respond to fear, if we respond with a fearful thought, if we just perpetuate and prolong this struggle. So this is what we are supposed to work on, is on our mindset, our attitude, our thought and thinking pattern.
100% agree with you. And one thing that sometimes may surprise people is that, okay, we within the sleep coach school, like all we teach is around like how we relate to our thoughts and our emotions, and we do this inner work. So people may think that, oh, then of course you will be really anti-sleeping pill because you will not want that. But in fact, you know, if people may expect us to say like, oh, sleeping pills are bad and they have side effects and things like that. But in fact, if somebody would do that, that would actually just create more pressure to sleep, because then somebody's taking a pill and they're like, oh, I shouldn't take this, but I can't sleep without it. So I think it's actually very nice to emphasize that, again, not medical advice out there, but my understanding, trazodone, for example, has been around for many, many decades. I think it's perfectly safe. It's not been shown to cause any side effects. And I think that can be like really reassuring to know. And maybe the final thing to add here on my end is that sleep really always comes from the inside. Like, you know, trazodone can make us a little bit sedated, but it cannot make us sleep. So just for anyone who's taking medications, I think it always helps to know that, you know, the sleep always comes from you. It doesn't come from any place else, to like know that, you know, the magic is within us. I think that can always help. So just a little comment on that.
Yeah, exactly. I just want to add that basically I like the approach that the pills take give us a break. When we are struggling a lot, when we are very fearful, when we have many worry thoughts, and we really cannot get basically any hours of sleep, and we just take the pills and they help us, by the delegation, of course, like to make it a little bit easier. Like, why not to take it? Why not to make it for us a little bit easier? Just take it, and you always know that you can always taper off the pills.
Yeah, that's nice. Well said. All right. So there was now, like Stephen calling it. Here we go. Sorry, I didn't quite understand. Stephen says, I'm currently tapering off mirtazapine. I worry about this causing a sleep disturbance. Any advice? What do you think when we hear this, Veronica?
I also took mirtazapine. And I think it is normal when you taper off some pill that it you are aware of it, that you are tapering off. And your mind is going to be focused and monitored. That, come on, you are tapering off. You are lowering the dosage. I really wonder, how will you sleep tonight? So it is really normal that this monitoring will happen, and this monitoring, it can increase our hyperarousal. So it's really expected if you don't sleep so well for a few nights, right? So, but if you get used to it, if you, like I like what Elena says, that everything new becomes eventually old when our brain gets used to it. Okay, to this dosage, we'll take lower and lower, and basically our brain gets used to it, and then there is no problem with it. So basically you just keep on going, and simply don't stop, you know, and just go, keep going.
Yeah, you know, what I read here from Stephen was like, I worry about having a sleep disturbance, and as you said, it's almost inevitable that there will be some sleep disturbance. And the same teaching goes along, like when we try to like, oh, what can I do to avoid having a sleep disturbance? Then we're in kind of a struggle, but we're like, yeah, I'll probably have it. Everything that's new becomes old, then things get easier.
Yeah, and he called it right, sleep disturbance, not insomnia.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. All right, Lauren has a question for us here. And she says, I doze off almost every night when I'm reading to my kids at their bedtime, 8:30. Then when it's my turn to fall asleep, I find that I'm rejuvenated and I can't fall asleep as early as I'd hope. Should I force myself to not doze with the kids? I can stand and read. You know, I'm just smiling because I'm just imagining somebody standing to read, which is, you know, a little unusual position. But common question, common phenomenon here. What are your thoughts when you hear this, Veronica?
I think you should not be forcing against what your body is telling you. So I think it's really nice just when you do so with your kids. You know, it's I do this also. Always read with my kids and stay in the bed. But I think what creates the trouble is the thinking afterwards. When you just doze off and then you wake up, of course, you are refreshed, rejuvenated for a while. But it's naturally, of course, your sleep dry hasn't been consumed all. So it's normal that you go up and then you go down again naturally, like you are going to be sleepy again. But when you think like, oh my God, why am I so excited? Why am I so, why I don't want to sleep? And this thought pattern will keep your hyper arousal for a really long time in the top. So of course it's normal that you are going to have a problem to fall asleep later on.
Yeah, 100%. And exactly, like just to kind of rephrase what you said, if you fall asleep while reading to our kids, which exactly the same thing happens in our family, and we then think, oh no, I fell asleep, what's going to happen now? Then there can be some struggle. But when we're sort of like almost the opposite, like, oh, I fell asleep, oh, that was a little nice, a little nap there, there's no struggle. And just very briefly, because this is such a common thing, it's just a common thing that what we call the Houdini effect, when somebody's like, I was really, really tired until I went to bed, then I became very wide awake. And actually, as odd as it sounds, this just means that our brain is working exactly as it should. Because if we imagine that we're about to fall asleep and then we remember, like, I left the oven on, then we become wide awake, because it's like the brain's like, this could be dangerous, let's be awake here. But when the brain has been kind of confused and it's like thinking that being awake is dangerous, then we can be like super sleepy. But as the moment we're like, now I hope I will sleep, then it's like the brain goes like, but what if you don't? It kind of wakes us up, because there's like this perceived danger. Yeah. Like, and when that misunderstanding goes away, when the brain no longer thinks that being awake is dangerous, then that Houdini effect disappears as well. And by the way, yeah, actually I want to add one more thing, which is that, yes, if we try to like stay, like if we try to like, okay, I'm going to be standing up so I don't fall asleep, so I can sleep later on, we're just creating another effort for ourselves, right?
Exactly.
All right. So Richard says, how long should screens be off before bed? And it's a great question. I'm smiling and you're also smiling, because when I hear this, it sounds to me like Richard is probably fairly new to our channel and our teaching. And that's, you know, you're super welcome, Richard. And that's great. But what do you think when you hear this question?
Yeah, it really smells like a sleep effort on the first place. And secondly, basically, it's not at all about the screens, about the blue light. It's really about the fear underneath. Like if you imagine how many millions and billions of people every night, they are watching TV, they are watching screens, playing video games at night, and they can easily go to sleep. So why do they don't have insomnia? Just only for one reason, because they are not afraid of being awake at night. And that's why if you like screens, you can easily use them. So that's all about it.
Absolutely. And just to add to what Veronica said there, if you know, we hear so much that if you don't sleep, like you should turn off your screens, and then like even like, oh, how many minutes before, how many hours before. But really, if our idea becomes, I have to turn off my screens, avoid them so I can sleep later, it's just us trying to sleep, trying to force sleep, and then sleep doesn't happen. Very, very well. All right, so let's move on to Muhammad, who says, can't fall asleep the night before a big event. My engagement is coming up. Well, congratulations, Muhammad. That's big. I am afraid. Yeah, common scenario, this one as well. Now, big event, can't sleep before it. How do we approach this?
I think the best approach is to normalize it, because again, if you compare this to someone who doesn't have a problem with insomnia, they also have problem to sleep before big events. It's like your example with the child before Christmas. That's, they are so excited, like, oh, Christmas is tomorrow, so they don't sleep well. And this is also kind of hyperarousal, but this is a positive one, this nice excitement that they are looking forward, really. They just want to be so up so early that they can't even so fall asleep. So this is really normal. And if you normalize it, I think when you don't expect that you will sleep much, I think the fear drops down, and you don't force sleep. And if you don't force sleep, it is much, much easier to fall asleep.
Yeah, exactly. It's so paradoxical, right? When we don't expect it, when we're like, yeah, probably won't sleep, then we sleep. If you're like, I'm probably going to sleep all night, then we don't. Like, it's that paradox. Yeah. But final thing to add to that is, like you said about the kid before Christmas, they may not sleep much at all, but it's still like the best day of the entire year. And exactly. I think the same thing can happen with these things. Like, we're getting married, we're getting engaged, and maybe we don't sleep that much at all, actually, but it still becomes a wonderful day.
Exactly.
Very, very well. So let's look at this question from Ashley. Ashley says, with irregular sleep, can it cause derealization? And I think by derealization, and correct us if we're wrong here, Ashley, but I think Ashley means this sense of like out-of-body experience, like not knowing who I am, kind of this bizarre kind of experience that we sometimes have. What do you think about this one?
I think all the various, or how should I put it? There are many ways how hyper arousal can manifest. So I think derealization and depersonalization, which comes together, it is very normal and expected. So again, this is about normalizing this experience and not to be afraid of it. Because if we are not afraid of it, and if we normalize the situation, it takes the pressure off, it calms us down. And when this happens, when we do not prevent these things to happen, over time, they happen less.
Absolutely. And you know, you went where my mind went immediately as well, which was like derealization probably is an expression of hyper arousal or fear. And, you know, I've thought a lot lately about these, like, you know, how popular culture actually gets a lot of things right. Meaning, we often see in movies or TV shows where, for example, like there's a, I saw a recent TV show where, you know, somebody found like, somebody died, like somebody found a dead body or something like that, and they became so upset that they threw up, you know, like it shows us that our emotions can make us vomit, right? Or another common thing is like, we see in a TV show or something like that, when somebody says, please sit down. Why? I have something. When you hear this, you're going to want to sit down, which is an expression of how when we hear something upsetting, we can become like really dizzy and fall. And I think many of us have experienced like when there's like this one like very big moment in our lives, we feel like out of body experience, right? Yeah. So like the strong emotions can give rise to that. And now Ashley specifically said like with irregular sleep can cause derealization. And to me, like what we think of derealization comes really from this fear and hyperarousal, but maybe with irregular sleep, you know, we can have a little bit more of those, like, you know, how when we're jet lagged and we wake up when we don't normally wake up, it can be a little bit like we can have a part of a dream or things like that can happen more. But the true derealization, I think, also comes from more of the hyperarousal.
Also, I'm just thinking now that basically it is also a symptom of anxiety. Like this derealization, depersonalization, and kind of like feeling numb on the side, when we don't feel any emotions, when we are really like these weird experiences, and it is so scary for us because I don't know. We are like a mother is supposed to feel love to her child, but if she suffers like really strong hard insomnia and doesn't sleep like really long time and really is suffering in this, then these feelings can come up, like really symptoms of anxiety, fear, hyperarousal. So all these fall under this hyperarousal and anxiety and fear.
Yeah, and where that actually is so helpful is, I think when we think like, oh, my sleep is irregular, therefore I have this, so I must fix my sleep. Yeah. Then we're in this like effort trying to fix sleep, which leads to more trouble sleeping. But when we're like, oh, this is another way I'm experiencing fear, I don't need to like try to fix my sleep. Yeah, automatically leads to sleep happen easier. All right, we have a lot of questions coming in, which is wonderful. Now, Let's look at this one from Dominic. How do you stop monitoring for sleep? My OCD amplifies the monitoring, and you know, of course, this is a common question. It's so natural because when we have any type of problem in our lives, you know, if our car isn't working, if it's kind of working like it's been giving us problems, then we automatically monitor. We want to know, how is it going to work today? What's going to happen? Monitoring is such an automatic part of our, like, a problem solving brain. When it comes to sleep, you know, it's extra tricky because the monitoring itself affects our sleep. So it's a very natural question. Okay. When we find that we're monitoring, we see that it's not that helpful. How do we leave the monitoring? What do you think, Veronica?
Yeah, basically by not trying to stop it. So when we try to stop the monitoring, the more we are monitoring. So there is no other way as to accept it, as to see it or tolerate it. Like, okay, in a way, maybe it's going to feel so weird, but you can even tell yourself, Dominic, that, okay, I'm monitoring. I know that I monitor for the moment I'm falling asleep, for example. And it's okay, and it's normal, because my brain is fearful and is scared that I will not cross the bridge from wakefulness to sleep. So with the acceptance and time, it basically gets better.
Yeah. There's nothing really else. That is the way. And when, you know, Dominic mentions, like, with OCD, it's harder. It's one of those, we can look at it both ways. One is that we can think of, like, I have OCD, so for me this is extra challenging. Or we can, in a way, sort of use that to even more normalize it, that, like, monitoring for me probably is even more expected because I have this tendency towards OCD, and the more we normalize, the easier things get. So a little thing there. Let's maybe do one more. Maybe let's pick this one I'm not even gonna try to say Bilgica. I'm just gonna say Bill. What do you think about the connection between inner child work and insomnia? Are you familiar with, like, inner child work? I'm not, but this whole idea of, like, us having an inner child is very near and dear to me. I believe a lot of it. But what do you think when you hear this?
This is a very interesting question for me. Thank you for this one. And I basically have never thought of this connection, but what is an inner child? Our inner child is the baby or the child that is still in us, that needs to be cared and tend and loved. And if we didn't get these emotions from our parents in our childhood, we might not have, we might carry these kind of, like, negative feelings in our adulthood. But if there is anything in common with inner child and insomnia, when I think about it right now, I don't think so. Because when we just look at the insomnia, really, it is only a fear from being awake at night. So, you know, in my journey from insomnia land, I have been to many, many doctors, to many, either from the academia and or alternative ones, and I had all possible various, like, diagnoses what could cause my insomnia, and it really, really all fell down to the fear from being awake at night. So I think it is important to work on our inner child and to see where it goes to make our inner child happy. But because this is even possible even in the adulthood. When our baby, our little child, wasn't happy when we were little, we can give this love to it now, because we have these memories. And what are the memories? Memories are only thoughts. And we can thought differently. We can change our thoughts. We can change our memories. And if we replace negative memories with the nice memories, we still can feel the love that we didn't feel when we were little. But we can feel it now. We can replace this.
Yeah, that's so nice. beautifully said, and very interesting. It's one of those times where, like, we saw this question differently. Like, you saw this as somebody who's thinking maybe something like, oh, maybe something happened in my childhood that I have to go back and fix so that I don't have insomnia now, which is very, very tricky, which, you know, exactly as you said, like the past really doesn't matter. It's like the fears we have now that matters. But the way I saw it was more like, and you probably know more about this than me, but anyways, I've heard this like inner child analogy in terms of like how we treat ourselves when we are scared and things like that. And people have said, like, sometimes I, instead of like berating ourselves, like, why am I scared again? Why am I always anxious? Why am I, then we can treat ourselves with that kind of inner child way. Like, I just have an inner child who's scared. It's okay to be scared. I'm going to give myself a hug and things like that, which is just self-kindness, which is really nice. So I think that part can be really, really helpful, right?
Of course. It's always helpful to be kind to ourselves.
It is the way. Bill says, thanks for the effort of trying to pronounce my name anytime. You know, I would love to hear it one time. I'm going to Google it and see if I can learn it. Steven says, thank you as well. So yeah, we'll conclude there. It was super nice having you, Veronica, and we should do this soon again.
Yeah, thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye everyone.